You may be wanting to turn to Matthew chapter 7. We shall be reading in a few minutes, beginning with verse 15 on down to verse 20. I really don't know how many times I've climbed the stairs to be up here before you. But every time that I receive the good invitation from this congregation to participate with you, it is always a joy to come back to be with you, worship together, and remind each and every one of us of such a tremendous privilege we have as Christians to worship together, especially in a country that is so rich in so many blessings, so many ways. The Lord God has blessed us with an opportunity this morning to consider His Word. The lesson this morning has to do with trees and fruits. Some of you know me from my past for many, many years, and it may be kind of strange to hear what I am about to tell you. I am a person that likes trees. There are many trees in my life. When I was growing up in South Texas, just outside of Corpus, in a little town by the name of Senton, mesquite trees are plentiful. Now, they are not your best looking trees, I have to admit here at the very beginning. But I want you to know that as a kid, as a child, and as a teenager, we used to chew the fruit of the mesquite tree. Some years after we moved out of Senton, came up to Houston, somebody thought of the idea of using mesquite for cooking. And they thought that that was the best thing that could be used to barbecue. Well, I surprised a lot of people when I told them that was no secret. We were doing it way back before way back. We had an old mesquite tree where we would set up our swing. And it was always one of the most privileged thing to do was to go back in the backyard and sit under that mesquite tree. But we also had other trees in our yard and in the block where we lived. There was the old fig tree that produced some of the best figs that I can remember eating. And then there was the peach tree on the property of my aunt. And of course that was off limits to us. But we still remember sneaking in once in a while to pick up some peach that were on the ground. We were not allowed to pick the ones that were real nice and juicy on the tree. And then there was the pomegranate tree that was on my grandmother's property. And I want you to know that that tree produced the best pomegranates that I've ever eaten. And then having the opportunity to travel down to the Valley of Texas, citrus trees abound, orange trees. And those that might be in our audience that are from Florida or California, you might think that you have the best grapefruits in Florida and California. But you haven't eaten grapefruit unless you eat the ruby red. grapefruit that grows in the Valley of Texas. And probably the best grapefruit is what is known as the Star Ruby Red. And here in Houston, we have a lot of trees, as you well know. The pine tree, the oak tree, the pecan, and so on. And in most of my trips, I can identify the countries by the trees. For example, the eucalyptus trees in Argentina are just humongous, in Chile and Ecuador. And then you have the banana, the coffee, and the avocado trees in Costa Rica, El Salvador, Guatemala, some of these countries. So I kind of like to talk about trees and fruits. But then when we look in the Bible, we hear about the tree of life, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, the pine or fir tree which Noah was commanded to build the ark. And of course, the children quite often remember the sycamore tree and Zacchaeus. So we all can relate somehow or the other to trees. Jesus used the common knowledge that people had of trees and fruits in his preaching. And in Matthew chapter 7, we find these words that he spoke in verse 15. Beware of false prophets who'd come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits. Do men gather grapes from thorn bushes? Are figs from thistles? Even so, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, nor can a bad tree bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Therefore, by their fruits, you will know them. What a simple statement. And yet there is nothing hard for us. We can understand such a simple statement made by Jesus. But yet, concerning trees and fruits, we can conclude here just very simple that the tree is known by its fruit. There's no big deal about that. We also know that the fruit identifies the tree. And also that the good tree produces good fruit. And Jesus added that the corrupt tree produces evil fruit. And that the good tree cannot produce evil fruit, just as well as the corrupt tree cannot produce good fruit. And finally, he is saying that the corrupt tree is cast into the fire. There's nothing hard about that. And yet, when you read verses 15 on down to verse 20, you know right away that what Jesus had to say here really was not to educate people about trees and fruits. That was not the point. The Lord's point here is to use something that was so commonly known, so well understood by common people just like you and I, trying to get us to reason, to understand this is what it is. This is the basic, this is the simple thing. But yet, based upon this simple statement, Jesus said, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are ravenous wolves. You will know them by their fruits." What a statement. And from this statement and from the following words that Jesus spoke, Jesus wanted his disciples and the people that heard him, and he wanted us, as we read and recall these words, to know something very simple about religion and about us. And the first lesson that I want to point out to you this morning concerning these words, what Jesus was saying in essence was that appearances are not always truthful. When you see something at the very beginning, what you see is not what you think you see. Let me tell you something that is well known among us. We as humans depend on appearances. We work at it. We spend a lot of money in appearances. Some of us, it takes just a little bit more time to get prepared, to get dressed up. Some of us spend some money in how we want to appear because we are concerned with appearances. Just notice and recall all the work you went into this morning to get prepared to be here. And when you go to work, when you have to associate with other people, how you want your children to appear, how you want the public to acknowledge your appearance, and how you notice how others are spending either money or time to appear as best as they can. But underneath it all, we understand that appearances are not always truthful. And that's why Jesus made the statement, "Beware of false prophets who come to you in exterior clothing that appear to be something excellent, good, and profitable. But watch out." In John chapter 7 and verse 24, Jesus made another statement according to John. "Do not judge according to appearances, but judge with righteous judgment." And boy, that really goes home, don't it? It really touches the nerve. When you make a judgment, when you make a judgment on anything, be careful. Don't make it according to appearances. And this is true not only of how we look and how we conduct ourselves, but this is true in the teachings, in religion. And Jesus had this in mind when he said back in Matthew chapter 7, "Beware of the false prophets who appear to be righteous, correct, and right, So that's a lesson that we need to learn and to apply to our lives. Let me also suggest another lesson that we can learn from Matthew chapter 7. That claims people make are not always truthful. That is, that what people tell you what they are or what it is not always truthful. These false prophets were telling people that they were righteous, that they were faithful, that they were correct, and that they respected God's truth as it is. But in essence, that was not what it was. So you cannot bank on what people tell you. Boy, what a lesson. I don't know whether I've told you this particular incident that happened around 17 years ago. My mother came up to Houston from Senton, and she had a can of dirt, and in that can of dirt was a small tree, a citrus tree. And Mom said, "Reuben, I'm bringing you a lemon tree." She said, I've given one to your brother. So anytime you want to plant this on your yard, just go ahead and plant it. So we waited a couple of months because it was right smack in the middle of summer. And those of you that know anything about planting know that the sun is a little bit on the hot side here during the summertime, and that's not the time to do this. So we waited, and several months passed by, and we prepared it, and we planted it out. Anyway, make a long story short, we planted the lemon tree. And that tree started to grow and grow and grow and grow. No lemons. Goes up higher than the roof of the house. No lemons. No lemons. My mother passed away just a few years ago, and we took her down to Sinton. We buried her there. That was the second week of February. We came back to Houston, and about a week later, the phone rings in my office. My wife, Minnie, was calling, and her voice was cracking up, and she said, "Run back to the house. Come quickly." So I returned to the house. I couldn't find her. So I went outside, and she was standing under the lemon tree, because finally that lemon tree was blooming. After 10 years or something like that, you know, the tree was blooming. We were so happy to finally see that that lemon tree was going to produce lemons. Around November, we were always keeping an eye on that tree. I told Minnie, "You know, I don't think that's a lemon tree." And she said, "Well, your mother said that it was a lemon tree." I finally had the nerve of cutting one down, and I told her, "That's an orange tree." And lo and behold, it was an orange tree. My mother told us it was a lemon tree. It was an orange tree, the best oranges I've ever eaten. Now, you may not want to believe that, but I want you to know that we have drank some of the best orange juice from those lemon trees. Now, do you think my mother was lying to me? No. She wasn't. She probably got the seeds confused, because that was where it came from. She really had some seeds, and they looked alike. But when those seeds were planted, up came a tree that some 16, 17 years later, it identified itself. My mother said it was a lemon tree, but it actually was an orange tree. And you know, that has happened to others. I'm sure that you've had the same experience. And what the point is, and this is the irony of what I'm fixing to tell you, because we don't have to go very far in chapter 7 of Matthew, because in verse 21, Jesus, just after speaking about these fruits and trees, he says in verse 21, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' shall enter the kingdom of heaven, but he who does the will of my Father in heaven. Many will say to me in that day, 'Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in your name, cast out demons in your name, and done many wonders in your name?' And then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Depart from me, you who practice lawlessness.'" You see the point? You may say, you may claim, you may make a statement, you may appear. But it's beyond that. And we have to be careful about the claims people make, because Jesus was warning his people and us that what people claim is not always truthful. But there's another lesson that I want to put before you from this particular text. That trees and humans are judged by our fruits, regardless. Remember that lemon tree? What was the product that convinced me, that turned me and my wife and even you today? You haven't seen the tree. But here I'm making a statement. I'm letting you know what happened. That fruit that comes out every year identifies that tree. And that lemon tree is no longer a lemon tree. It is an orange tree, because the fruit has identified that tree. It's just that simple. Children can walk up to that tree like our grandchildren had walked up there, and they said, "That is an orange tree." How can they be sure that it is an orange tree? Because of the fruit. That's how simple it is. And Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 20, "By their fruits you will know them." It's that simple. It's not hard to understand such a simple statement as that. Let me just stop here and let me tell you something that I've heard through my preaching years, and I've heard people tell me, and probably you may have this idea. You know, you can't always tell about people. You've heard that? You know, we cannot make a righteous judgment. It's very hard to judge a situation or pass judgment on people. You know, some years ago there was this trend that we could always determine whether it was or wasn't. But now we're back to the old standard of, no one knows for sure. You know, we don't really know what's going on. And I hear brethren preach today that the truth cannot be known. Now, they're not telling you that straight out. But the way they say things, by the way they preach, by the way they teach, you know, every idea or every belief or every position now has found itself in Romans chapter 14. Now, we don't really know the truth about the church. We don't really know the truth about the family. We don't really know the truth about divorce. You know, we don't really know the truth about the work of the church and so on. And boy, if that's the truth, then, I mean, what in the world are we doing here? But let me point out some things that I see in the context here. If we cannot know by the fruits that are produced, then I ask myself, why did Jesus give such a warning? If we cannot know for sure, then why did he say, beware? If I cannot know for sure, then there is no reason for him to have said, beware. Another thing to consider. Why point out the deceiving signs if we cannot detect the deceiving signs? You follow me? If there is no way for sure that we can know that we are being deceived, then why tell us about it? Why in the world did Jesus point out the exterior signs of these false prophets if that don't make any difference? You know, you're going to be fooled anyway. Why point out the differences between the good and evil heart if we cannot detect the evil and good heart? My dearly beloved, if there is no way that we can identify fruits, then why in the world do we have a brain? Why in the world did Jesus speak these words to warn us, telling us to beware so that we might pass judgment by the fruits that are produced? Let me also point out another lesson here. In this particular lesson, Jesus was also making the statement that the quality of our fruit is determined by our character. There is a parallel passage to this one in Matthew that I want you to go with me. And this one is found in Luke chapter 6 and verse 45. I'll give you time to go there because it's very simple what he said according to Luke chapter 6 verse 45. Jesus said, a good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart brings forth evil. For out of the abundance of the heart, his mouth speaks. So it does make a difference how you look at things. It does make a difference as to how you analyze a thing. It does make a difference as to how you feel about a thing. It does make a difference as to your attitude, as to our heart in dealing with religion, with morality, with truth, in the church, in the home, in business, and in whatever field we may find ourselves. What we give, what we produce, is determined by our attitude. Jesus makes the statement here that a good man, that is a man with a good heart, with a good disposition, out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth good. And the good that comes is because the good is already in his heart. I want to go back to my backyard. Because 2 years ago, my brother brought a lemon tree. And he said, "Reuben, Mom gave you a lemon tree that turned out to be an orange tree." He said, "And I went out here looking, and I found a lemon tree. Sure enough, this one is a real lemon tree. And it's not very, very tall. It's about that tall from the ground up here. And it's already got lemon. We had a few lemons that were cut prematurely by one of our grandsons." We tasted it. Sure enough, it's a lemon. But maybe Lynn might be able to help me later on in finding out how to cure that tree. Because it's sick. Something's wrong with it. I haven't figured it out. Something's wrong with that tree. But you know how I know that something's wrong? Because the fruit, that lemon, those lemons are not like they ought to be. And you don't know my family until you know how much we love lemons. And we haven't been able to squeeze enough juice from those lemons. Something's wrong. You know, it doesn't take a Philadelphia lawyer or a Houston lawyer or a good old gospel preacher to determine that something's wrong with that tree. Because by the fruit. Well, that same theory, that same knowledge applies to us and what we do or don't do. The fruit that we produce tells something about our attitude. So the quality of our fruit as Christians is determined by our character. There's something else here that I want to put before you this morning. Jesus was teaching here that our evil fruit will condemn us just as not bearing good fruit. So it is not just the idea of having lemons from that lemon tree. But the idea is to have as good a lemon from that lemon tree as we have oranges from that orange tree. I would like to see that lemon tree grow as high as that orange tree and to produce as good as lemons as we have oranges. That's what I'd like to see. It's not just the fact that we want a tree there producing lemons, but we want some good lemons. That's the same thing with us. God wants us to produce fruit, but not just any kind of fruit, but he wants us to produce good fruit, good works, to have a good life, a correct life, an obedient life. That's why he makes the statement in verse 19 of Matthew chapter 7, every tree that does not bear good fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. What a simple statement. You know that it is urgent that we be good and that we bear good fruit. And that we understand that that's the whole meaning here in religion. So the illustrations that Jesus used were so simple and yet understood by people of his time. Those listeners, they understood. They didn't question. They understood because it was such a simple statement. Well, these illustrations can also be understood by us today, because they are for us. So our duty, as I bring this lesson to a close this morning, is we ought not to deceive ourselves, and we are not to allow others to deceive us. We ought to be careful so that we may be living lives that are honest, sincere, open, correct, obedient, and faithful before God and before man. So how do you stand this morning before God? Are you a good tree or an evil tree? Are you an obedient and submissive person in the sight of God? If you're not a Christian, you ought to be one. And boy, what a way to start to be just right, as God would have you to be. If you are already a Christian and you have changed, you have forsaken the Lord, and you have identified yourself with that evil and harsh and ungodly attitude, why don't you repent? Make your life right with God and with this good congregation. If you're subject to the Lord's invitation this morning, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing?